Hour 2, G-Bag Nation, 105.3 The Fan. Thanks for making us part of your day. Rangers baseball is coming up this evening at 6:30. We need to snap a four-gamer. Where is your Rangers confidence right now at 877-881-1053? Go ahead, text into the show, Rangers fans. Leave your name and city you are texting from. We'll make you famous right here on the show. I got the text window open, okay? CY's coming up at 4:20. Have to ask him a question around this. You know, is the bat offense back? Do you regret not making a move at the deadline for a bat, or maybe over trading for a bat at the deadline, which is what you would have had to do? But I mean, here's the reality, guys. They're about to face the most difficult stretch of their schedule. This series against Arizona is a rare set against a team below 500, and they're just barely below 500. So Yeah. You got to make hay right now against Arizona. Get a cushion over 500 going so we can start targeting 85, 86 wins again. But it's up and down. And I said it last hour, you're looking at a yo-yo situation, and teams that yo-yo and get you excited for 1 week and disappointed the next. At this point in the season, it's tough to imagine them pulling out of that. Okay, and that is why ESPN's David Schoenfield put the Rangers where he did in his contender tiers. Let me ask you this. If I said there were five tiers, where would you put the Rangers right now? Five contender tiers. Three, four?
Do you have a heading for each tier? Does each tier tell me, like,
okay, tier one
lock to be crush everybody in the playoffs?
Tier one locks. Tier two should get in. Tier three have work to do. Tier four, long shot.
I think they're tier three.
Yeah, I'd say have work to do.
Yeah, they do. It seems like the things that have kind of plagued them all year, with the exception really of the pitching, the starting pitching, put it that way, bullpen, they went out and get help, but the hitting has kind of come and gone. And so, and especially in key situations and key series and stuff. So I would say they have work to do. They're going to have to figure things out better than they have right now.
Where would you put them, Chief?
Well, I mean, I'm looking at, they got like a 22% chance to make the playoffs. So that is right there in that tier three or four category. And they're going to have, I mean, they have big time series. You mentioned the schedule and just how difficult it is. You still have, what, six more games versus Houston. You're going to have to really do some damage in those series for sure. But, I mean, a lot of these, dude, Cleveland, you have plenty of divisional games still remaining. But, yeah, it's you're going to have to put
season
together.
It's funny. You finished the season with Cleveland, I believe.
Yeah, you got two more sets against Cleveland, who's directly
what if,
in front
what if
of
that
you.
Mean, what if that's for something, like, all
no,
of
it
a sudden?
Is. Yeah,
what if
I think Cleveland's right ahead of you. So mm-hmm. those are big games. You've got to
You got a home with them and then a road with
yeah,
them.
You're two yeah. and a half back. So it's just like you're not – I don't think you're a long shot. Like, everything's right in front of you. You beat Cleveland, then you're going to pass them. You got the Angels who aren't – I mean, they have played the Rangers tough, so that's not a gimme.
Yeah, I guess the long shot idea is just that it feels like a long shot now that this offense is going to be able to be legit and consistently score five, six runs a game.
Yeah, I think the only good news is that you're losing games while still managing to keep the opposition low. It's not like you're getting blown up, and therefore your run differential, but isn't that out of whack? It's not predicting that you should turn towards a major collapse. Actually, last week just kind of said, hey, these are what happens in Major League Baseball where you're operating on really thin margins, and sometimes, you know, you have a bad week, you don't get the key hit, and you don't, you know, score after the first inning for multiple games in a row. It's tough. But Schoenfield puts the Rangers, that being said, at four. He calls them a long shot, says they have to continue to ride Eovaldi and DeGrom, figure out the closer situation, and have the offense keep hitting like it did in July when it was better than it had been all season. Yeah, I thought July was the new normal. Well, this first week of August showed you that not so fast, my friend. Journeyman Robert Garcia has been closing, but he gave up two home runs. We know that story. The Rangers are done with the Mariners, but their six games against the Astros loom large. And it's crazy because, I mean, they really hit the skids as Jock Peterson came out and said, hey, you want 1,000 OPS? Hold my beer and watch this. He has obviously taken off in the month of August, and the offense has tanked. So, you know, I think that just speaks to the level of frustration here.
Yeah, I mean, like the 6-8-2, I don't know where you guys get the optimism from. The optimism is there's three big keys in baseball. It's pitching, it's fielding, and it's hitting. Two out of the three, the Rangers are the best in the sport. They've got the best team ERA when it comes to pitching. They've got the best fielding percentage in Major League Baseball. If they can just find a way, and they showed you that they're capable of it. They went up against buzzsaw pitching against the Phillies. They went up against Wheeler, who's an ace, and then a Cy Young candidate, and then Jesus Luzardo, who's also having a good year. So, like, I get it. Like, I'm with everyone on the frustration of this offense. It's underperformed. They got to nuke this thing in the offseason and figure it out. But they are elite at two of the three aspects in terms of how you win baseball games. So if they can just find a way in some series and take advantage of some lesser pitching, they have no excuse if they drop those games.
214, this is BMAC and McKinney. My Rangers' confidence is in the crapper. There's no swagger and a spotty offense. 903, no hitting, confidence low. That's your guy Jerry in Corsicana. Glad we got some bullpen arms. We need a proven bat. Our lineup definitely needs a boost. Good to see Jock get some stuff figured out. I think we're tier three. That's Tolo Micah from Azle. And salute to you guys out there at 877-881-1053. Here we go. 214, I believe. And to be honest, you know, obviously, if you've been listening to the show, I've been on this for 15 years. You know that I tend to skew cynical and skeptical. But to be honest, there is hope. There is a spark of life and hope in my Rangers heart at all times. And I don't know what it's going to take to make that go away. Maybe 4 or 5 years, of not making the playoffs. But, you know, 2023 did something. And with so many good players on the roster, maybe you change managers and, you know, you move on from Evaldi. Maybe that would do it for me. But I mean, I still really feel like there's enough good stuff in here. But what this team needs now is a more significant overall haul to get lefties. I think you say, who do you say goodbye to? Adolis Garcia, absolutely. Jonah Heim, absolutely. Like, where you need a first baseman that hits lefties. That's enough. New right fielder, new catcher, new first baseman, all that hit lefties well. Reset in 2026. You bet your ass I'm going to be confident in these boys. Okay, Sanders impressing in preseason debut was the headline. This was Friday night, and I was lucky enough to watch a good amount of this game. Quarterback depth chart expected to stay steady is your update here as we hit the Monday. It was seen as a confidence builder and a building block for the fifth rounder by the Brown staff. Despite the positives, there are areas Sanders needs to work on, such as pocket presence and handling pressure. Currently ranks as QB4 behind Flacco, Pickett, and Gabriel. That's just hating. You know, the Browns are likely to keep all four QBs on their 53-man roster, with Sanders proving himself as a roster-caliber backup. I mean, I get it. The guy has some things to work on, but so does Joe Milton. Like, Shador's better than Joe Milton, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you take your talented guy and you throw him out there and you hope that he figures it out. You don't bury him on the depth chart. I think this continues to be a story where the coaching staff didn't want him, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when you draft a quarterback in the third, you draft two players at the same position and one a couple rounds higher than the other. The guy who got drafted higher is just inevitably going to get a couple of more opportunities because it's like, hey, we drafted him earlier. That's the choice that we made. So yeah. We look like schmoes if 2 months ago we thought he was better and now all of a sudden we don't. But everybody knows that throughout the draft process, very few individuals, if any, had Shador Sanders being rated lower than Dylan Gabriel. But this is the Browns we're talking about. We're not talking about a team that has any idea on how to do anything.
Yeah. Guy's hilarious, too. I mean, he exudes franchise quarterback, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think that he is. I mean, I think he's going to end up being the guy for the Browns. I think you start with Joe Flacco because I think that's what the veterans in that locker room probably want. They believe he gives them the best chance to win 2 years ago. He did. He took them to the playoffs. But how long do you think that's going to last before we realize this is old Joe Flacco here? And Dylan Gabriel, I'm not a huge believer in. I think Shador is better. I think Dylan Gabriel could have a good career as a backup. But, yeah, to me, I think by the end of the season, Browns fans should be excited that Shador Sanders is their future franchise quarterback.
If I was the coaching staff at Cleveland who's got 1 foot in the parking lot right now, I'd play Sanders. And I'd play Sanders in a way to try and show ownership that we can make a young guy win.
Yeah.
You know, that we can coach a young guy up to win. I mean, you're not – yeah, you maybe save your – you might take a chance. Joe Flacco might be good enough to make you 500. But you got to show that you got to show the Haslams that something like, listen, you know, you brought me here to coach. I can work with this quarterback. I know we got a bunch of them. Let me have a shot with this guy. I just go ahead and play the young guy and then give it a shot. And if it doesn't work, then, you know, he'll go off and get a coordinator's job somewhere. But you got to show that you can get something out of Sanders. And I would much rather take a chance with him than I would Joe Flacco.
Yeah, you know, you got to show ownership if you want to keep the job, that you're not going to crap all over their draft pick just because it's not who you wanted. You got to be flexible and show the ability to do what the boss wants. And I would imagine, did you guys see the interaction that he had after the game with the reporter?
Tony Grossi's a little, is he
old crusty?
Yeah, he's like me. He's had an agenda. He's been going after Tony. Tony, I guess he did with Baker too.
Tony's always been a guy that he just kind of puts himself into the story. Yeah. And that's unfortunate there.
Well, I just love how the kid has gone with such grace through all this adversity, and even in confronting the reporter, he's got like this tone about his voice.
Yeah.
You know, that's not super mean.
Like, yeah. Right.
You know, he's just like, hey man, come over here. He kind of sounds like his dad now. So I'm rooting for the guy. Cowboys, you ready for a good joke before we go any further? Dak told Stan Kroenke, "We'll see you in the NFC title game."
I love it. I love the confidence. Manifest it, baby. Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, he might be the next pro athlete turned stand-up comedian with a line like that.
You see Stephen Jones' face during it all after he said it. Steven was like, I don't know about that, Stan?
Admire his confidence. You know something I don't know?
Gosh, dang.
So, I mean, seriously, I would love your guys' thoughts on, like, what we saw in the context of, could it still be a really good team? Like, how much of that is, well, it's the backups, guys. It's preseason game one. To me, it's a continuation, and it's a sign that their depth isn't going to come save the day.
The problem that you really run into, and the biggest thing, and Zach and I talked about this in the post game, is there's some guys that played in that game the other day that you're going to need to play well. They're going to need some of these guys to absolutely step up. And, you know, a lot of guys didn't play. But you can't get through a whole NFL season and not have guys play at a high level. I mean, you had some guys that showed up. I think Wheat showed up. I think Houston showed up. But there's some other guys that they're really relying on to come in there and maybe be be a contributor to them winning football games. And if you're not playing at that level, then that's what makes it tough. Because, you know, you're like going, God, you're here trying to make a job, win a job. Trying to be one of the 53, and then you go out there and you're not ready. You're laid off the ball. Whatever you have to do, you know, to get yourself ready. Some of these guys just didn't do that in that game. They weren't ready to play that game from the jump.
I mean, I only see NFL playoff level, I guess, with your pass rush, with your quarterback, your wide receivers, and your tight end. I don't think anything else has proven to be good enough to be a playoff team. Would you disagree with that in any way? Linebackers, secondary?
No, disagreements.
The defense.
Not the way the secondary is currently configured.
Yeah, you got a lot of problems in the secondary.
Like, it'd be exciting to get it healthy.
Yes, it would be. I mean, that would help you a lot. But they need to go out there and sign some guys that can actually play NFL football. And at defensive tackle, like, your two starters didn't play, but... Man, I'm cutting ties with Mozzie. I've seen enough there. I didn't think Ernest Brown played really well in his reps. Jay Toia, a lot of people are pointing to the fourth quarter. He got exhausted. You could tell. The pad level was really sloppy, and he got blown off the ball. Otherwise, you saw him with good get-off, and he was being able to get disruptive and penetrate a little bit.
The scheme is all about getting across and playing on the other side of the line of scrimmage, and there were some guys that were able to do that, and I think JT was one of those guys. And then late in the game, though, they caught the Cowboys in a situation where JT, Daxton, those guys were like playing, the pad level was way up, and it was just downhill runs. It was very, really simple. There wasn't anything any type of scheme thing that they couldn't have handled. But I thought, for the most part, for the first time, I thought JT played pretty well.
I'm with you.
And it was funny, and you look at the metrics, he was doubled, and he had 12 pass rush attempts.
He was doubled a lot.
He was doubled 9 times out of that.
Yeah.
So pretty wild how they doubled the tackles in this game, and they left the edges to deal with the tackles, the offensive tackles, and some tight ends. So there really wasn't enough winning on the outside as opposed to maybe what was going on the inside.
Well, Brian just told you Wheat and Houston looked good. He has a full report coming up in Krusty's Corner at 3:40. He does that every day. And if you want to be Cowboy smarter, you should make an appointment to lock in on that. Should the Cowboys be in on a trade for a running back? I saw Tony Pauline today confirming Breece Hall is, you know, the Jets are looking at that like they'd like to move on before the deadline and move forward with the running backs Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis. You know, I'm not sold that any one of the guys in the Cowboys running back room is going to be a bell cow, is going to be a star. I think they're all serviceable, and you can hope for the best for them. I would love to believe that the Cowboys would be serious enough about winning that they would have a conversation today about trading for Breece Hall. I just don't think there's a chance in HE Double Hockey Sticks that they're actually doing that.
No, it'd but, be a rental piece, too. I mean, unless you want to pay the guy.
Yeah, and hey, I'd pay him. I'd say, dude, this guy is so freaking good. He's 24 years old. He's been healthy the last 2 years. Sure. I'm willing to give him $18 or $20 million, and we'll make our team actually good. And now we have a path to let's run all over him, throw over the top, score 35 points a game, and hope our defense is good enough in, you know, ideally limited snaps because we're holding on to the football for 8 or 9 minutes again. That's your path to victory, Cowboys, if you want to do a trade for Breece Hall. But I know you don't. You know, I know you're content to make us suffer for the next 3 or 4 years until your A-plus scouting department drafts up a good roster that you can go be a playoff disappointment with. Okay, coming up next, it's time for the C-Note Cowboys news of the evening. We'll get you caught up on all the headlines that have been developing since Saturday night's game here on the Fan. Yeah, buddy, welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation here on the Fan. 469 says, guys, I'm bummed about Fan Phenom. There's a Jake's walking distance from my house in Flower Mound. That's the only one I have a chance to get to. Was hoping that was a stop. I'll try really hard for Frisco, but might not make it. Sorry about that, Flower Mound. But we are at every other Jake's Burger location giving you a chance to be the next Fan Phenom. And just stay tuned for details, and we can't wait to see you out there. I mean, Thursday nights round one, Chief, some incredible talent out there amongst our Tolos.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. I mean, this is going to be a hell of a race to the finish line, I'll tell you that much. I'm excited to see. I know Waldchuk's going to be getting in the mix here coming up very soon, which is going to be exciting for him.
Next week's in Fort Worth, I'll be hosting after the show.
I think we got CA that's going to be hosting it, the Hall of Famer. That's going to be fantastic. I mean, just what an incredible opportunity to have that. Like, hey, I got to at least do a demo seg, probably get some tips and tricks from a 3-time Hall of Famer like that in Grand Prairie this Thursday. And I might go for a quad burger. I don't know. Quad. Maybe a 5-stacker. I might just add one each week. So I did 3 last week. Like, we'll that. Do 4, finish it out with a 6-banger in Frisco.
Okay, so I got a Joe Milton theory for you here. And I'll get to that in just a second. Segments brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car, truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Franklin Frankel, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. I think he might be about to have his best practice as a Cowboy, Brian, and I'll tell you why. You ever had that round of golf that was so amazing?
Never.
that game of pool or darts or long snapping.
Long snapping.
Yeah. Where you're like, oh my gosh, I was so on fire today. I think I might be going pro, right? Sure. That's what happened to Joe Milton last year, week 18, right? He had his GOAT game, and it's happened to all of us. Like, I shot 78 on a golf course once, right? Mm-hmm. I think I've only shot under 95 times. I shot 78 once.
It was 9 holes, but whatever. Thank you, Chief.
Okay, so what did I do? The next day, I went out there thinking, oh, 90's cake. I shot like 98.
Overconfident.
Oh, yeah.
Darn it.
So last year, week 18, Milton had his God-level game. The problem was there were no more practices. There were no more games. So Joe sat there and stewed with the idea that, damn it, I figured it out. Took me a year sitting on the bench there, but ain't no way I'm sitting behind Drake May next year. I see the writing on the wall. You either make this an open competition or trade me. So the Patriots said, well, I guess we're going to have to trade you then, Joe, because you're apparently all world. And then he got to the Cowboys and has continued to do that. And the coaches have been like, Joe, you cannot throw the ball through a barn into traffic, 40 times a game. Please, you know, manage the game, play calmer. And then he went out Saturday night. And now he said he gave himself, a D-minus after the game? He graded himself D-minus. So that was his sobriety moment. That was his, oh, my goodness, that was just an amazing game. That wasn't the new me. I hadn't figured everything out last year in New England. So now he's back to a more humble version. He probably feels like a bit foolish for demanding a trade in New England and believing him so much. But Todd Archer had a quote in his story about Joe Milton, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, that was the game that made me realize I can actually play in this game and do a lot more. Right. So that was his mindset going into Saturday. Now he's like, oh, crap, I got a lot of stuff to work on. Oh, crap, I'm not going to have an NFL career if I don't agree that I should run the ball a lot and check down a lot. You know, so
and not rip it 100 miles an hour every single time. Yeah.
I might actually have to listen to the coaches when they say, Joe, you got to develop some touch on that pass. You can't rifle. Because I was thinking I was just going to throw between 40 and 70 yard touchdowns every time I drop back. I mean, that's how he practices, right?
Yeah, it is.
I love this.
Unleash the cannon.
This was his back to the lab game that he just experienced.
And it now, happens to all of us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've won like two or three online poker tournaments in the course of a week. I thought I'm going pro.
Yeah.
You know, moving to Vegas. Baby.
And then like a month later, the account is at $0 as I've, you know, just turbo played nonstop tournaments for the last month thinking this was my big moment. And I'd figured the game out. But sometimes the universe just lines up for you and allows you to have an amazing game. And then you're humbled shortly thereafter.
Well, I'm ready for week two then. See Joe refine some things.
Yeah, it's a big week two because I'll tell you what, if he does not come back in week two significantly better, you got to go Will Greer in the dress rehearsal game so you can get him as much experience as possible running this offense. Am I right?
I think that Will Greer is going to play the final game anyway. The question I have for you guys right now, as I pause Breece Hall watching.
Best runner in the game?
No, I was just watching some carries of his just to kind of get an idea what kind of player he was. The question I have for you guys is, you don't know what these wide receivers are yet, do you? Do you have an idea? Do you have an idea who all these Cowboy wide receivers are?
I mean, able to see good route running and people running open. Unfortunately, like I think Flannoy could have had a monster game, and we'd be talking much differently about him.
Do we need to play Will Greer to get an idea of how these receivers are going to look?
Yeah,
is it more? Is it more important? Is it more important to get an idea about Tolbert and Mingo and Flannoy and Holden than it is to see Joe Milton play anymore?
Yeah, that's
if it's
that's
an actual
really
competition,
question, yeah.
Then yes. Like if it's true and Shoddy's saying like Holden's going to move up the depth chart,
because you don't know how many of these guys are going to play in the final game. I mean, that game could be.
I mean, I can watch the all 22 and see guys getting open. I want to bet on Milton's upside, even if there's only a 1% chance he realizes it.
Well, I'm just saying, though, yeah, these guys are getting open, but do you want to see them like catching the ball and running with the ball and making plays? You know, like he threw that ball, that interception. He had no business throwing that ball. He just was launching that thing.
He just wanted people to see the rocket.
Well, they ran a route. I mean, it was a really nice job of, you know, some guys getting open, but he just launched it, you know, just to see what would happen. And you know, unfortunately, got intercepted, but. I just wonder, as an evaluator, would you want to see these receivers have a chance to catch the ball?
Yeah, I mean, you would. You would like to see that. That's what makes this a little bit more of a challenging question. It's a great question because you want to develop Milton. We keep talking about how Milton needs the reps. But for this team right now of guys that you actually feel like you're going to have to lean on to some extent, you want to see those guys get better opportunities, and Will Greer probably does provide some of that. So I don't know what the right answer is, dude. It's a great question.
See, I think that Bobby, excuse me, Dawson, I think Bobby said something to me the other day that was very, I'm like, wow, that's an interesting way to put it. Bobby said if they had to go win one game, that you might play Will Greer.
Yeah, that makes so much sense
to me.
But if you had to find a way just to go and play out the season, that you play Joe Milton.
Yeah, like if you had a season-ending injury.
Give him a chance.
Milton. But I think if it's 2 to 4 weeks, I think it's Will Greer.
I mean, isn't it similar to Cooper Rush, Trey Lance?
And they went with Rush, yeah. So I think Will Greer would be the Rush
Has anybody watched the Chargers?
He looked good in both games.
He's been good? Okay.
Look at that. Okay, 214 Churd here. Did he change his phone? I think he did. He used to be a SoCal guy, right? Doesn't matter how humble he is. Dak's the most humble person on the planet, but he still can't throw the ball with anticipation. Yes, but I tell you what, the self-awareness, the I'll do whatever it takes to win and do the job right, that's part of what made Dak so viable, early in his career, you know, yes, I will run it. I will avoid the interception at all costs. I don't want to be, I have to be a hero. Now, he believes in himself. He's going to take risks and, you know, try to make big plays. And maybe that's increased as his career has gone on. And that's why the interceptions have increased. But I remember Jason Garrett saying, one of my favorite things about you is you don't mind throwing the ball away, dirting the ball, throwing it out of bounds, because you know you can come back and live another day, you know, and keep playing. And you're not, you know, trying to force something and putting the team in jeopardy. We have Shoddy at the podium earlier said, is Joe Milton the backup? And he said, well, we don't have to decide that today. I need to get to learn him as the play caller. I'm not going to say who the backup running back is right now, who the backup QB is, because I don't have to make those decisions yet. So maybe owning it a little bit, like he's got to figure out the right plays to give Joe Milton. Is that what he's saying? Maybe there a little bit. He says,
I think to me, when I watched that, the all 22, I think some of this, now the early play call in the first six, I kind of felt like that. Okay. That's on Shoddy. That's not knowing the condition of your defense right there. You know, his defense needed a break, and to go three and out twice, that's not very good game management right there. He didn't help, but luckily they kind of got things together. I think he was struggling to find plays for Joe that would work. I think he had that play sheet. It looked like the Cheesecake Factory menu. We always talk about that they were kind of like, we're going to be vanilla. Mm. That thing looked like it had hooks and rings and all kinds of
pages. Was it like a binder? Page,
it was just a flip sheet of stuff that he could get to. But I think early in that game, he struggled to find plays that Milton could execute.
It was weird to see them. I mean, I guess post game, he acknowledged, like, I wanted to throw the ball around with Milton. So, I mean, he told us what his thinking was, but I was like, geez, they come out and they throw the ball six times.
Not when your defense was as bad a shape as that one. Well, and I thought the Rams were going to score every series. Physical. I honestly did.
Physical. Run the ball. That's all we've heard. Yeah. And then he came out and threw the ball six times for 1 yard of offense. It was kind of like, whoa, what's going on here?
I mean, I do kind of like the idea that maybe Milton was just too fired up. Like Bassick will talk about a pitcher in a new situation, especially in his debut, just throwing it way too hard. And, you know, you just can't get your body dialed down enough to relax and play quarterback or pitch. I could definitely, you know, see that. And that's why I think game two for him is so big, because I don't think if he plays well in game two of the preseason, we should see him ever again in a Cowboys uniform. No deal in sight for Micah Parsons. That's the insider update coming. I just sense that this is adversarial enough, and this has gone on long enough now. There won't be a deal before week one, will there, guys?
Steven seemed very open to the tag when we talked with him. I don't think that they're against that. Like, it's either Micah's side budges first, and he decides, I want to get the deal done. And I think they're feeling like, you guys are the ones that need a budge here. And I don't think the Cowboys are going to do that. So if it's going to get done, I think it's Micah probably talking to David Mulligetta, like, man, I want my long-term security here.
Yeah, I think I think Mulligetta is asking for the Cowboys to budge first because his player was probably wrong in how he handled the negotiations initially. And so he's trying to save Micah's face, I think.
Got an old-fashioned standoff happening here with the Cowboys and Micah, and we'll be all over it if the news breaks, but I've just kind of put it on the back burner now, and maybe we'll get back to it in March or something like that, at least from my perspective. I'll be surprised if something gets done. What's coming up next, Brian?
Yeah, we've got plenty of things to talk about from the All-22. We'll do that next.
Welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation, and here on 105.3 The Fan, and it's Cowboys Monday, our first Cowboys Monday of the year.
First of the year,
and Krusty's Corner is brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Here's the king, Brian.
Thank you very much, General. Appreciate that. Thank you very much to Reliant. All 22 was interesting to this. Well, Chuck, you said you got yours yesterday morning.
Yeah, I watched it yesterday.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm glad. I encourage anybody out there, too, by the way, if you have the availability, funds to go ahead and go on to, I'm not trying to promote NFL.com, but if you have the ability to go on and get the All-22 stuff, go ahead and
do
it.
It's like $15 a month.
Yeah. Let me tell you what, you don't have to be a scout. You could just go and look, and it gives you the sideline copy. The end zone copy, you could see, like, you know.
Plus, you get like condensed games from other games. There's tons of content TV in here. Red zone.
There's like stats, all kinds of things. I sound like I'm promoting it here, but I'm promoting it for guys and gals out there. If you just want to learn, It doesn't. Maybe you watch it and you're you watch it and you're kind of like, oh, well, I don't really understand. Well, like I say, we got other platforms that can help you with that.
Yeah,
I got my stuff at the Crown Global Media that we're going to do. We got a lot of things that we can do to kind of help you understand the game a little bit better that way.
By the way, clutch t-shirt hoodie for Crown Media that you gave
Thank
me.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I mean, just perfect for the summer because you get full coverage from the sun, but it's still breezy. It's genius. It's
thank you. I appreciate that. Very kind of you. All right.
It wears well.
In this football game, and I just kind of just took it in order of like how the plays went off because that's how I just watched it. In the preseason, in the regular season, I'll watch offense and then I'll watch defense, but I just took it in the order that it came, on the film.
Going chronological on us.
A little bit. They're going to play a slant front. They're just not big enough to handle defense to play toe-to-toe with anybody. And so what's going to happen here is if they're really poor in run defense, and this is something you could tell on the tape, and Zach, please feel free to chime in if you saw the same thing. But when they are not good against the run, it's generally because they have bad fits. And this defense, this front, is going to be about movement, and it's going to be about taking gaps. And Zach asked me an interesting question today. He's like, why do we look like we're so spread out across the front?
They're lining up super wide.
Opponents do that to them. Opponents are going to do that to them. They're going to make, if they understand that you're going to be a front that's going to play gaps and try and fill gaps, they're going to spread you out. And I don't mean like the formation, but the width and the splits of the offensive linemen, they could cheat that a little bit and get a little wider, knowing that you're having to try and take gaps.
They're not, the O-line's not going to go foot to foot.
No. Not on you. No, they're absolutely not going to go foot to foot on you here. And I think that's where Dallas is going to, but if they're going to play this scheme, because it was clearly evident when, like, right off the jump, you see them that Eberflus tries to slant the front to the strong side of the Rams formation, and with Bell filling as the extra defender. So they're going to slant to the strength of the offense. And then they're going to try and fill the gaps with the linebackers to the opposite way, and then fill that extra hole with the down safety is what they're going to do. And so just right off the jump, JT holds his gap and Bell fills, but Wheat has problems getting off the tight end's block. And he can't close. So now all of a sudden, this is what happens to this defense. He's responsible for a gap. Leofau steps up. He gets pinned inside for the and leaving a seam. So what happens? Okay, now you've got a defender that's can't get to the gap. You got another defender that tries to undercut and get in the gap, but he gets pinned to the inside. Now you got these holes inside or these seams. If Dallas is going to be good at run defense, they are going to have to do a better job of getting off blocks. And again, these are not a lot of starters here. These are sort of backup guys. But, Maris Leofau, as well as he played, there's sometimes where he gambles. There's sometimes where he guesses. And I mean guesses that, like, he's guessing that he could run under this block and then get back in his gap. You can't play that way. If they are not gap sound with the way that they handle this front, they're going to get run on all day, and people are going to figure that out about them. And so it's going to be imperative, though, that they find ways to get off blocks, play gaps, play square. And it, because there were times the defensive tackles where JT and others were in good shape. Linebackers got him in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
James got him in trouble one time. Leofau got him in trouble one time. Clark got him in trouble one time.
Not Harris, who had a really good game. There was one play he guessed and shot the wrong gap.
And then and then the ball goes right past.
So the linebackers have to trust their ability to disengage and kind of slide into that?
That's it, man. Yeah. You've got to. And I mentioned James because one time he went straight shoulder into the blocker. And it kind of compressed him. And then so he gets moved But he's responsible for that gap. He's responsible for that B gap. And when he got compressed, then the ball just went right past him. And so the next time around, he played with his hands. They probably saw it on the sidelines. They said, listen, you've got to extend. You got to be, and then he makes a play. So that's going to be, if this team is going to, like I say, have any success in run defense, it's going to have to get better.
I wanted to ask you about James, and it seemed like there was a couple of times he was just stuck in quicksand that I'm like, fire. And he just,
which
like,
is what I saw on tape at Florida. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, he's not the most instinctive guy.
Okay.
And that's, and they had a little problems with the defense too. And I'd been talking up and really, really looking forward to Damone Clark playing in this game. Damone Clark reverted back to some of the things that got him in trouble the last couple of years.
Yeah, that was disappointing because he was a captain for the game. Yeah. Everybody was fired up. He's had a great camp, great off season. Yeah. And then it looked like the same old Damone Clark.
Yeah, I was hopeful that in this, the one game, the one opportunity, but in practice, he was part of, if you look at the depth chart, he was Leofau or Clark. So he had put himself in position to make some, to get some opportunities. They gave him some opportunities. This team, when it came to pass coverage too, by the way, as much they played a lot of zone in this game, and the linebackers, it appeared that the linebackers were just frozen with Bennett. And I mean frozen, they just were eyes in backfield and really weren't reading very well. It happened one time too with Wanya Thomas. His ball to the outside, and you could clearly see that they're all just stuck. They're all stuck, and the ball's going to the outside, and you could see that Stetson Bennett is clearly looking to the outside, and he just stays in the middle of the right on the hash,
just in no man's land. I mean, it's frustrating. You got guys
drive on the ball, try and make a play, but here you got space. And they're not driving on the ball. Everybody was just kind of like they were just waiting. It was almost like they were waiting for somebody else to make a play.
And that the ball went over the top on him too. Yeah. For like I did not think Wanya had a strong outing.
No, I didn't think so either. They were struggling in that regard. I want to just look real quick. I'm sorry, I lose track of time here. But Joe Milton, the third down play, where he throws the ball to Tolbert inside. This is the problem with Joe Milton. And when the coach is trying to help him, they try and run a third down run, a max protection, and it really does work. I mean, they get exactly what they want out of the protection. And Milton has four options. He selected the most difficult throw, which was Tolbert. That was the fourth option. Three other options was Schoonmaker in the flat, Cropper or Mingo inside over the middle at the sticks, which he's looking at that. He's looking at those guys, and for some reason, I don't know what pulls him, the end zone copy, it looks like it's a clean throw. He pulls that and then tries to hit Tolbert on the one where it should have been intercepted. That's Joe, you can't do those things. You got to be able to take what you can, get the first down, move on, and then keep the drive going. But he took, and they called the protection to help him, and it did. So, unfortunate right there with that one. The Adeniji sack. Okay, I'm going to do this one instead. Let me do Awesome Richards, his situation, in the back-to-back two deeps, if I could, real quick.
That was frustrating.
Yeah.
Okay. The second one from the sideline copy, it looks like that his helmet is in the middle of TJ Bass's body. It looks like that he's up on the line. But what happens is that you look at the official on the far side of it, and the official puts his hands up like, I just told you, move up. So you see the official hands up and just throws the flag like, you've got to be smarter than that. If the official tells you to move up, move up. Now, I will say this about Awesome Richards. I thought he was the best offensive lineman you had in this game. I don't know, Zach, if you kind of noticed.
I thought Nate Thomas was fine in pass pro.
Yeah.
I thought Awesome did a really good job, especially in the running game,
being able
to seal.
Right. Other than those two, he didn't give up any pressures in the game. And he was able, or the, and he was able to, in the run game, he played both, he played tackle and he played guard.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to successfully run the ball behind him. And then also, too, his side was not getting pressured. So good job by Awesome Richards.
Would you say the depth at O-line is good?
I would say that, to me, if they determine that they're going to go with Bass and they're going to go with the center, with
Hoffman,
and they also are going to go with Awesome Richards, then they've got to kind of figure out if they want to go 10, they're going to have to figure out two more guys.
Yeah, because I thought of Johnny Cornelius had a pretty good game too at right tackle.
It's funny, the tackles were all right in this game.
Yeah.
They really were. Sadiq Charles, I don't think, is particularly good. You know, and the veteran, and then Adeniji, like, he gave up the one sack, and he was clearly off balance on the play. Like, he got worked underneath, and then he was on one leg. And what happened was Charles is playing next to him, and Charles is off balance too. So now, instead of trying to help and make the play, they're both off balance. And unfortunately, though, that was that led to a sack right there. So, and another thing I want to kind of point out here before in my time ends here, that I saw a lot of routes where, and Zach, again, you had a chance to see the tape, I saw a lot of routes where the receivers were in the same spot.
Yeah, and that Brooks catch.
Yeah.
Him and Cropper were both in the
same
spot.
It happened three different times where receivers were in the same spot as other receivers. And I wonder if that's just trying to do too much, or do we really know what's going on play-wise? And just, do we need more work with these receivers to try and figure these things out? Because there were several times where the routes ended up where Milton was throwing the ball to an area and there were two receivers in the same spot. And that probably shouldn't be the case.
No, that's not how you draw it up.
Yeah, not at all.
Well, thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Krusty's Corner every afternoon, 3:40, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning. Former Ravens coach, Super Bowl champion, hell of a broadcaster, Brian Billick joins us next here. It's the G-Back Nation and the Fan.